don't go now. Here's a Hunter, and he'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise, La Pantanita! It's a Honduran connection.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. March 26th, the United States, back here in Houston. They will take on Chile. Important match here for us when it comes to 2026 and potentially being a host city, but it's also an important match for a lot of the young talent now that is a part of the U.S. national team system. One of those guys is Matt Miazga, now at Reading, only 23 years of age. Started out with the New York Red Bulls, signed by Chelsea, and then started out on a first loan to Vitesse. Matt, thank you very much for joining us, as always.
Yes, pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so let's talk about first off 2016-18. At Vitesse, Dutch Eredivisie, what is it most you learned there in those 55 games you played?
I learned a lot, to be fair, on the pitch, obviously, and off the pitch as a person, too. You know, my first real test of, you know, consistent European football. You know, obviously I came to Chelsea at a really young age and was with the first team, but didn't get much playing time. I was kind of trying to, you know, break in. And then obviously went on loan the next season, you know, to get consistent game time and really get that experience in the European level, because at that time I only had really MLS experience. So it was really good for me to, you know, to get consistent football on the European stage. Obviously the Dutch league is a very known league in the world where they develop a lot of players and a lot of attacking talent. So for me, it was good as a defender to play against those attacking players with a lot of, you know, creativity and flair and attacking philosophies, playing football. And obviously playing out of the back, I was able to raise my game and improve with my passing, because in Dutch football, you know, they like to play the total football, building out from the back and playing attacking-based football. So, like, from that aspect, I definitely did learn a lot.
Matt Miazga joining us here as we talk about his amazing career. United States national team will be in Houston March 26th to take on Chile. You can get your tickets at ussoccer.com, and there's a good bet you will see Matt Miazga on the field that night. So you mentioned playing out of the back, and that's always one of the issues with center backs is, yeah, you got to be a ball winner. Yeah, you got to be positionally sound. Yeah, you got to be a part of a back four or back three. But, you know, when you break plays up, you got to be useful with it. And I know that's one thing you hear the new U.S. manager, Greg Berhalter, talk a lot about, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, first and foremost, don't get me wrong, the most important thing is, you know, sticking to your task defensively and, like you said, being a ball winner and helping the team keep clean sheets. But as well as, you know, adding that extra element to the game and helping your team, you know, start plays from the back, build out, you know, make those passes between lines to kind of, you know, disorganize the opponents and attack and create chances towards the goal.
Then it's on to Nantes in France. So what's kind of the differences in your mind with French Ligue 1 and the Dutch Eredivisie?
Yeah, I would say Ligue 1 was a bit faster paced, you know, as well. A lot of attacking talent in Ligue 1, play against a lot of great players, you know, good experiences, big stadiums, great atmospheres, and obviously the pace was a bit faster than Eredivisie, and I enjoyed my time there as well. I learned a lot, obviously started off very well. Personally, obviously towards the end, it is what it is. I didn't come to full fruition, but, you know, I'm happy with my time there, and I learned a lot, and I can take it forward with my career.
Yeah, I'm thinking in a short amount of time, and listen, this is not an easy life here. This is an incredibly competitive life. Can you touch on that? Because I know a lot of kids listen to the show as well, and, you know, they see the glamour, they see the crisp uniforms, they see the trappings of success, per se. I don't think they understand the pressures that go along with this. Certain things can happen that are misconstrued. You've had those types of situations at Nantes. Explain to them how this thing encapsulates much more than just making sure that you're training good every day.
Yeah, of course. There's always little things that off the pitch that build into, you know, your confidence and your performances on the pitch, and, you know, making sure your whole focus is on the pitch. Obviously, every aspect has difficulties, but, you know, there's a lot of different aspects in the realm of professional football where, you know, moving to a different country, adapting, learning the new language, trying to, you know, become, you know, closer with your teammates, creating those bonds, and then learning the new coaches, the coach's philosophies and his tactics, and and his expectations of you. So a lot of things that go into it. And obviously, sometimes, you know, you don't understand certain things that happen when you're not playing. You think you're playing well, and for some odd reason, you know, you're not getting the minutes you think you deserve, and you have to be able to continue to plug along, to stay professional, to keep pushing yourself along, to keep doing extra work to improve, and those little things come a long way. And obviously, you know, for the future, those things are very helpful for you to continue to build on your career. And, you know, sometimes you go through ups and downs, but I think with the downs and the difficulties and the obstacles that, you know, you get as a professional, you can, you know, learn a lot about yourself on bouncing back and working through them and making yourself better for the next challenge and the next day, because that's all that matters. It's about continuing to work on yourself and getting better from difficulties and challenges.
Well, your career seems to be falling into a great place because, you know, you jumped all these levels at the U.S. International level. You know, you went from under 14 all the way up to the full national team. You've played in a variety of different leagues after doing so well in Major League Soccer and getting signed by Chelsea. And it seems like you're getting these different flavors of different leagues. That said, at some point, you really want to stick somewhere. Where do you think that would ultimately be? And what is your goal? Where do you stick your flag in the ground and say, you know, this is where I want to be in 2 years?
Every player, every person has their own journey in their life and in their career. Obviously, mine has given me a lot of different opportunities and experiences, and I'm grateful for that. And I want to continue, you know, to build and build. Obviously, I'm here in England now, and I'm owned technically by Chelsea, and I'm on loan at Reading. So, you know, my ideal goal is to, you know, stay in England, stay, hopefully be a Premier League player and continue to build. Obviously, I know I have to continue to work, continue to stay focused and perfect my game, and hopefully I can continue, like I said, to keep working to achieve my goals. You know, I have my goals that I want to achieve, and I'm going to continue to give it my all to make those goals happen. So, you know, that's the plan, is obviously to stay in England. You know, I feel like in England is the best league in the world, best supporters, best fans. So, you know, I want to continue to work here, do well. Obviously, my main task right now is to do well here at Reading and help the club. And I'm just focused on that. I'm focused on getting better every day to achieve my goals for this season.
Matt Miazga joining us now, currently at Reading, U.S. National Team center back. United States will be in Houston March 26th, ussoccer.com, to get tickets for that game against Chile. Okay, again, so my big thing here is, as I look at your dossier here, you know, Vitesse, Eredivisie, Nantes, Ligue 1, and then Reading. Now, very, very differing leagues, and you would say there's differences with Major League Soccer. When it comes to your managers in all these leagues, whatever team it was, it could have been Vitesse, Nantes, Reading, it could have been the Red Bulls, could have been Chelsea.
Yeah.
Is there anything that really separates or is very differing from any of those managers that they wanted out of you specifically as a center back?
No, like you said, every coach has their own ideas and their own philosophies and their own tactics that they and their own visions of football, you know. So for me, obviously, getting little things from every coach, I've been able to add to my game and play in different styles and things of that nature. Recently, I've played under a coach, a Portuguese manager at Nantes in the beginning, and now a Portuguese manager here at Reading. And, you know, I really like their styles of play where, you know, they emphasize possession-based football, building out the back, switching the field, constantly switching the field to drag the opponent in, and then switch the field and attack the other space, and things of that nature. Obviously, defensively as well, you know, they demand a lot, because when you have possession of the ball and you're high up the pitch, you need to be aware. You need to understand, you know, to be organized, res defense, and things of that nature. You know, I can go on and on of every manager I've had and what they wanted and what I learned from it, but we'd be here all day because I can talk about these things a lot. But I'll give you a quick snippet of, you know, the two recent Portuguese managers that I've worked under, and obviously every manager so far, like I said, has given me, you know, little parts of their visions and their ideas and what they want, you know, and I can do that to make me better as well. So I'm learning a lot under these new all these new different systems that I've been playing under these past few years.
Your manager at Reading is Jose Manuel Gomez. You described in an article that I read that there is a level of chaos in the championship. And we always hear these stories about, hey, it's harder to play in the championship than it is in the Premier League because of some of the chaos, and maybe it's controlled chaos that occurs there. What have been the challenges of adjusting to playing with Reading in the championship?
Yeah, you know, I came in, obviously, just recently in the January window, and and they also just recently had the manager a little bit before me, and he made a new playing style with the team. So it's more so us, you know, continuing to follow the ideas and to get better with this new philosophy of play. And obviously, that's, like I said before in interviews, that it's attacking-based football, and it's a lot of, you know, passing and playing out and spreading the field and being very expansive. And obviously in the championship, you know, a lot of teams are very direct, very chaotic, want to go to the goal as soon as possible. So it's kind of, you know, managing offensively your build-up and everything, and then the transition to defensively, if you lose it, you know, automatically getting organized and being ready for the attack of the opponent and their counterattack. So, yeah, I can describe the championship as obviously a very fast-paced league, intense, and you can't really take a break. There's constantly some type of action going on, a lot of battles and aerial duels, but it's something that I enjoy and I like, and I'm going to continue to make sure I give it my best to continue to work and like I said, you know, take it game by game and garner wins and move up the table.
What's the most difficult type of striker that you have to come up against?
That's a good question. Every striker, like I said, poses his own threat. Everyone's different. Every striker has their own qualities and strengths. You know, for me, I respect every striker. I know they all obviously are professionals for a reason and can do damaging and do well. And for me, it's just about, you know, in the week leading up to it, you know, knowing about their style of play, knowing the striker's weaknesses and its strengths, you know, playing to know that when he gets the ball, I know how to defend it, so on and so forth. But then the day doesn't really matter. The most important thing is making sure you're focused, you're confident, and if you have those traits and your mentality is strong, you got to go out on the field and make sure that no one's going to take anything from you, and you're going to make sure you do your job, and that's the most important thing. That's to help your team as well.
How much studying of opponents do you do, like individuals? Like, do you look at their tendencies on tape and just to kind of get an idea of some of the habitual things they do?
Yeah, it depends, really. Usually leading up to a game, obviously, our team analyst and the manager, you know, in meetings we have, and this is all the teams I've been through, we have meetings of the analysis of the opponent. And in those meetings, you know, you get a feel for how the other team plays, you know, what they like to do, the players they have. And then that's where the manager, you know, speaks his thoughts as well as the team analysts and all the assistant coaches, and they tell you. And usually, obviously, I can tell while watching those videos as well. And obviously, when you're on TV at home and you watch games from the league that you play in, you kind of get a feel for how teams play and certain players and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, and I think I would say leading up to the game, you kind of get a feel for everything and understand it all.
He's Matt Miazga, U.S. International, currently at Reading. How much of that is put upon you yourself? In other words, you know, I watch training of MLS teams here, you know, when I'm doing my work, and I see a lot of young guys head to the locker room and take off. I see other guys stay out there, do extra training. Mm-hmm. How much at this level now that you've gotten to, is it about going beyond what the coaches do for you and doing your own sort of homework and additional things in addition to what they're telling you?
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. You know, if you want to be the best you can be, you know, you want to reach the next level, you want to play at the highest level, I believe you have to do things that others aren't willing to do, and things at the end of the day that you think will benefit you. Because at the end of the day, it's all in your head and the mentality that you have. Just consistently, you know, finding different ways to get better, if that's analyzing video, watching football matches, you know, stretching, nutrition, rest, sleep, weightlifting, repetition. And like I said, always before, I believe that, you know, through hard work, dedication, and continuing to, you know, repeat exercises and different things that you're weak on, working on weaknesses to make them strengths, will make you a better player. Because at the end of the day, it's, you know, say you can't, for a little example of you can't juggle with your left foot, or you have a difficulty playing a left-footed long ball on a precise dime, I would say, a precise pass over a length of 40 yards, right? In the beginning, you know, out of one or two times out of 10, you'll hit a good one. But the other eight times, nine times, you won't. This happened to me before. If I continue to work on it day by day, don't get frustrated. Just take it into stride, consistently get better and better, and over time, before you know it, you'll be hitting 8 out of 9, 10 perfect long balls. And then, you know, you gain your confidence, and then you can take it into games and things like of that nature, and showcase your abilities. So I believe that, you know, repetition and hard work and little details that you can improve on your game off the pitch as well, and even on the pitch after training. There's a little extra things, little extra hours. It doesn't have to be hours, just little minutes. You can get better and reach the next level. So I strongly do believe in that.
Matt, listen, thank you so much for coming on the program. We look forward to hopefully seeing you here in Houston, Texas, when the U.S. national team takes on Chile on March 26th. Tickets at ussoccer.com. Come out, come and see some of the great young American talent like Matt Miazga, currently at Reading and in a real promotion relegation battle right now. So he's right in the thick of it, and he was gracious enough to give us some time here tonight. Thank you so much, Matt.
Perfect. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Matt Miazga. What a tremendous story that is. We appreciate Matt being on. Hey, the place to be in Edo is Kings Court, 903 Hutchins, shadows of BBVA Compass Stadium, 13 monitors, all your soccer watching desires. The rooftop deck, spectacular. Great view of the stadium. British and Indian pub style cuisine. And by the way, next Wednesday, we go live down there at Kings Court as we prepare for the Dynamo opener in Major League Soccer on March 2nd against Real Salt Lake. Okay, so I'm reminding you again, live, Kings Court, next Wednesday. Also, a big thank to Advantage BMW. My friends down at Advantage BMW, these guys are the best. Get down there, talk to Philip, talk to Justin. They love soccer. I have a BMW, driven one for years. I've leased and owned from them. The thing I love about Advantage BMW, obviously the vehicle, but the customer service is second to none. Advantage BMW Midtown will cover you with sales, service, finance. We did a live show down there a couple months back. Get that hometown advantage at Advantage BMW Midtown, AdvantageBMWHouston.com. We'll take a break. More to come.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm from the ESPN 97.5 studios. Here's Glenn Davis.
Hey, a quick moment here for our second hour presenting sponsor, the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. You know what they're going to do? They're going to bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com. 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. They also love the sport of soccer, football. Whether you're getting a car accident, motorcycle, industrial, construction, you work in a plant, refinery, drive an 18-wheeler, Daspit Law Firm has you covered. They're going to work for you 24-7 nights and weekends. You'll get the representation you need at the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com are presenting sponsors. Now, the next young man is somebody I know personally, and he's an amazing young man. He's a starting goalkeeper at Trinity in San Antonio, which has one of the top college soccer programs in the country. Even more importantly, Blake Lieberman, who's going to be our guest here, also beat cancer as a patient at the Texas Children's Hospital. He was recently tabbed as a Southern Collegiate Athletic Conference Character and Community Award winner. This is a young man that gives back in a lot of ways. He's done it for a lot of the soccer-related items I've done here in Houston, and in fact, used to come to some of them when he was a teenager and I believe was still getting treated. He joins us now from San Antonio, Blake Lieberman. Blake, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, listen, first of all, just congratulations on the award. I mean, the reason I'm bringing you on the show here is for a variety of reasons, but the number one reason I'm bringing you on the show is because how aware of your fellow humans you are. This is an amazing award you got. Tell me a little bit about it and how you got nominated and how you won it.
So I'm honestly not entirely sure how I got nominated for it. I received an email from one of the ladies at Trinity, and she just said I'd been nominated, and can you send me a quick little background about some of the things you've done, and then we'll go from there. So she emailed me back. I went in, did a quick interview for them, and then they posted it.
Pretty incredible. So you've donated a lot of times, and charity and paying it forward, in your words, is something that is a big piece of your life. Now, listen, you didn't have the normal childhood battling real health issues down at Texas Children's Hospital. That's how I got to know you. But tell me a little bit about, the paint it forward aspect of your life that takes place all the time.
I think it's really important to pay it forward. I mean, I've kind of seen things from both sides, and I was very sick and went through a lot of things that a normal 11-year-old shouldn't have to go through. And through that, I met a lot of people who were going through even worse things than I was. And I mean, I can look back on it now. I'm healthy. I'm 21 years old. I'm starting goalkeeper for Trinity, captain here. And I mean, I really don't have any reason to complain about anything anymore. So just paying it forward and going back and doing what I can to give to these kids who are sick and don't feel well, and just kind of donating time and helping out where I can through different organizations.
Blake Lieberman joining us here, starting goalkeeper at Trinity in San Antonio. You've also had the opportunity to train with San Antonio FC, and you've also helped with a Cancer Element camp up there with my good friends Jorge and Lourdes Castro Ramirez, who lost their son. Mm-hmm. So you're doing it up there as well. But tell me about some of the things first off at San Antonio FC that has added to your goalkeeping training in a professional environment.
I mean, anytime you can train, it's always good. But being in that environment up there with Coach Darren Powell and some of the assistant coaches there and Juan La Madrid, I mean, they've been absolutely fantastic to me, giving me that opportunity to go train with their team and just being under goalkeepers like Diego Restrepo and Matt Cardone and just being up there with them. It's always been good.
And those are some of the players of San Antonio FC. And I know they've been impressed by you. Tim Holt, who is the president of the club and so involved as, I believe, the managing director. I mean, he heads the whole thing up. He's had amazing words to say about you. As far as Trinity goes, what a great choice it was for you. You guys had a good run in the playoffs this year.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, the way our standards are is we're disappointed if we don't end the season with a ring on our finger, but sweet 16 exit, I guess you could say that's a decent season.
Decent. Paul McGinley, what type of coach is he? Because he's really set up an incredible program there. I've known Paul for so long. And again, he's one of the kind of Texas treasures that we have in the college community. Tell me a little bit about Paul and what he means to you.
Paul's great. I mean, obviously, being the head coach, he's always around. He's very involved with his players, not just on the field, but off the field as well. And you'll just get random calls from him from time to time, just checking in, seeing how things are. We train almost every day during season. And then in the spring, we train any day we can. So he's very, very clear on his expectations of us. And obviously, we do what we can to meet those expectations. But, I mean, he sets very high expectations for us that are obtainable. And he holds us accountable for what we do.
Blake Lieberman grew up playing the game in Houston, starting goalkeeper for Trinity in San Antonio, Texas. He's also a cancer survivor. He's paying it forward in many, many ways. He's a young man we all look up to. Blake, thank you for coming on. He's also the Southern Collegiate Athletic Conference Character and Community Award winner, and he's another one of our own from Houston, Texas. So, I better correct that, Katy, Texas. But thank you for coming on, Blake.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
All right, so that's Blake Lieberman. We're going to move on now to the man who heads up the Cy-Fair Dynamos, Dynamo SC. He's Olivier Finidori. March 17th coming up, we have the Kick Cancer Camp. All right, Olivier, big event coming up March 17th. Let's talk about it. It's one that we've partnered on for many years. But first off, I just want to thank the Dynamo Soccer Club, you, Jim Walker, the late, great Joe B. Napier, and everybody involved for getting on board every single year, hands down, to support this, raise funds, do a soccer clinic where all the funds go back to a 501c charity, the Curing Children's Cancer Fund.
Yes, Glenn. Well, thank you so much for having me and to talk about this great event. And as you said, we've been doing this for many, many years, and that's something we're always very, let's just say, very motivated to be a great success. But this year, again, not that we lack motivation, but given the unfortunate loss of our chairman, Joe B. Napier, that invested so much into this camp, we're even more motivated than ever to honor his memory and make it even a greater success.
Yeah, and we're tagging it the Joe B. Napier sort of Kick Cancer Camp run by Dynamo Soccer Club. We're going to get some pro players out there. I'm going to be out there. We're going to get people from the community out there. So if you can consider that all the funds are going to go back to the Curing Children's Cancer Fund, a 501c charity earmarked for pediatric cancer research, we'd love to see you out there. I'd love to see you out there. Olivier would love to see you out there. And we'll get it done. It's always a fun clinic, Olivier, and your staff, again, we're very grateful for all the energy that they put into it, and they certainly get the importance of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Our staff is really eager to get at it again, and, you know, the kids come out, they always have such a great attitude, and, you know, we've got plenty of volunteers that are helping us out. Again, you know, players come in from any kind of club. It's open to everybody. You don't have to be a very experienced soccer player. It's open to every single player out there. We want everybody to come out and help us support these cause and have a great time in the process.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, it doesn't matter what soccer club you're in. You're welcome to come to this. And this is all about the fundraising for pediatric cancer and just having a great time. It'll be held at the wonderful Dias Park, which is out on Kitsman Road in Cyprus. You can sign up event information. You can find and you can register at thedriven.net, right? Is that where you register, Olivier?
You can go to thedriven.net, thecccfund.org, or you can just go straight to dynamosoccer.com on our website. It's on our homepage. We have a tab for the tournament. It's really easy to find the registration.
Yeah, so three places you can go. dynamosoccerclub.net, is that right?
It's dynamosoccer.com for the Dynamo Soccer Club, correct?
dynamosoccer.com, thedriven.net, or cccfund.org. It's really inexpensive. I think it's $50 to $55. It's all about getting kids out there. It's all about honoring the memories. We'll have some testimony from people that have and young people that are just amazing role models now that have beaten cancer. We'll reflect on those that we have lost that have been warriors. But I think it's a clinic that there's something bigger going on there, and that's why it makes it special, and that's why I think it's great for parents and young people to get out to.
Absolutely, and you know, obviously, you're very well familiar with Eileen Dowd, who's one of those beautiful warriors. Is basically what the way I'm seeing Eileen, and she's also part of our staff now. So obviously, she'll be out there. She'll be working the clinic. She'll be visiting with the kids and sharing some of her experiences. And she's such an inspirational person. So and there will be a lot more on hand as well. So come on out and support the cause.
We appreciate everything that the Dynamo Soccer Club does. Olivier, and your leadership has been great over the years. Do you ever miss the days of playing for the Houston Hotshots at the Summit?
Well, especially now I'm 50 years old and I can barely run 2 to 3 miles. I miss it more than you know. You know, I didn't miss it that much at first. I was, you know, I've been happy in the retirement, if you would. You know, very busy with coaching the kids. But now, yes, as I've lost quite a few steps, I definitely miss those days.
What do you love about the Houston soccer community? I mean, you know, you and I have been down here for so long. I mean, I came here in '84. You came shortly after that. We have seen it grow immeasurably. It's pretty remarkable, the contributions from so many people that never get any credit and deserve pats on the back. We try to do that on this show. But what is it you love about the Houston soccer community and in the surrounding area that's just chock full of talent and people that are just amazingly passionate about the game like yourself?
No, like you said, I mean, you know, when I know you were obviously here before me when there was not a whole lot of a soccer community. I know when I came later on, there definitely wasn't that much. People even used to be amazed that we could even head a soccer ball back and forth. So it was really new to them. And then to see the way that it's grown here in the last 30 years, really, it's really, really amazing. And, you know, the fact that we've had obviously so many people coming from so many different backgrounds, bringing their own culture and everything to the game and to the community here. But also the fact that with your efforts and a lot of other pioneers, if you want to call them like that, you know, with Jim Walker and Bill McDonald, that were there back in those days, and that really started all the youth soccer adventure, if you want to call it that as well. To see all how many people we've been able to touch and educate that have basically grown into real soccer passionate just like us, and that's what I found beautiful. So many people are just so truly excited about the game now. These are adults that are parents, some of them grandparents that, you know, we used to coach back in the days. I know it doesn't make us feel any younger, but that's really what's happened, and it's truly rewarding.
Yeah, it is truly rewarding. It's amazing to see people at the stadiums. Our professional soccer history goes back to the late 60s, and, you know, whether they were players on the Houston Stars, the Houston Hurricanes, Summit Soccer, Houston Dynamos, Houston Hurricane, Houston Hotshots, a lot of these players remained here to coach in the game. But it's not just them. There are pros from other countries. There are people that grew up here that have contributed wonderfully, have organized, just an amazing soccer community. Everybody's got a piece in it. Everybody's proud of it. And we got to continue to kind of shout from the mountaintop a little bit about the prideful nature of our soccer community and our Houston soccer history, which sometimes sadly gets a little bit bypassed. But I aim to change that a little bit.
Yeah, no, I hope so too, because like I said, like you said, basically, there's a lot of people that, you know, I think are going unrecognized. You know, obviously, the soccer community knows very well, you know, what Jim Walker's done, and, you know, guys like Arthur Young, you know, what he's done for the youth soccer community to help the game grow in this area. It's these are some amazing guys, and obviously, Joby Napier, that unfortunately is no longer with us physically, but he's always going to be there,
yes.
Looking over us, looking over the shoulder to make sure we're doing things right.
Yeah, there's so many like Joby Napier. Just, and by the way, these are people that you know, weren't taken back from the game. Victor Delgadillo. I mean, we can go on and on. There's a lot of great people that are just purveyors of the sport that through their companies have done tremendous work, like Rodrigo De Luna. I mean, I don't want to start mentioning names because there's thousands I haven't mentioned. Bob Yampey's another one that comes to mind. So a lot of people that have done a lot of good here. And we're very proud of what our soccer community is about and how many people go from this community, whether it's at the college level, the pro level, going off to coach. We've got tons of coaches in the college game that have emanated out of here. So it's a very prideful place. Olivier Finidori, thank you very much. It's Kick Cancer. It is hosted by the Dynamo Soccer Club. One more time, Olivier, where people can sign up.
Again, you can sign up at thedriven.net, cccfund.org, or the dynamosoccer.com website, and you'll be able to find the registration link on all three of these locations.
You're the best.
Thank you so much for having us, Glenn, and we'll see everybody on the 17th.
March 17th, be there. I'll be there. Olivier will be there, and so will so many others. Thank you, Olivier.
Thank you.
Hey, soccer fans, I got a new sponsor to Soccer Matters. It's Tri-Eagle Energy. They're synergy with their energy because they're the official energy provider of the Houston Dynamo, Houston Dash, and BBVA Compass Stadium. So let's talk energy. Lots of energy providers out there, and there's always different offers ranging from free weekends, free days, cash bonuses. The list will go on and on. Now, you may have fallen for one of these offers, and months later, you find out you're paying a higher rate or there are additional fees on your bill. It's different with Tri-Eagle Energy. They keep it simple. The rate you see is the rate you pay. No gimmicks, no minimum usage fees, no charges if you go over a certain amount of electricity. Check out Tri-Eagle Energy, 877-93-EAGLE. Log on to TriEagleEnergy.com. Use promo code ESPN for an additional discount. TriEagleEnergy.com. Promo code ESPN.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm from the ESPN 97.5 studios. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. As we roll on here, again, a quick reminder for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. They are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. They are the presenting sponsor of this show. So they're bringing soccer to you on the airwaves here. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. Whether you get in a car accident, motorcycle, industrial, they will have you covered. They'll work for you 24-7, nights and weekends, and give you that representation you need. DaspitLaw.com. And with that now, we bring on, from Talking Foosball, you all know Sal Mitha for his visits here. This time, we've got Matt Herman, also from Talking Foosball. Matt, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Oh, thank you. It's something I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, likewise. We are too, because we know you got a lot of great knowledge of what goes on in the Bundesliga and Germany. I want to go right off the top here to Oliver Bierhoff of the German Federation and the German national team has come out and has basically said, hey, look, we're not the best at youth development anymore. What are your thoughts on those comments, and how much of that is because of the fallout of what happened in World Cup 2018?
Well, I think it's really hard to put that tournament and the bad performance that Germany had in that tournament out of your mind at all. I mean, that was a historically bad performance from Germany at a World Cup, and everybody's thinking about it. It's on everybody's mind. All the same, I think that this has a lot more to do with the guys who are sort of coming along and aren't quite at the top of the world, you know, sort of international quality, like World Cup star kind of quality. But the players who sort of are thought of as the next crop, I would say for about, you know, two or three World Cup cycles, Germany was really thought of as a team that was just constantly producing really good young players. And there is a perception right now that at least in the Bundesliga or among young German players that things have tailed off a little bit. I mean, most of the sort of, you know, under 21 stars of the Bundesliga are foreign players, are players who are coming from England, coming from the United States, coming from Balkan countries, and, you know, or coming from France. That's another good example, guys on RB Leipzig, et cetera. And the idea that Germany is this sort of endless factory of good young players, other than a couple of big names, Kai Havertz and Julian Brandt at Leverkusen, were two big exceptions. The idea is that maybe things aren't as rosy as they once were.
So, I mean, the obvious follow-up question to that is, and you know, Bierhoff goes on and he talks about the fact that, you know, we need more game changers and, you know, our players aren't getting put into situations where they're allowed to be as creative as they should be. So as young a league as Germany is, you're basically telling me that these German clubs aren't playing young German players.
Well,
or enough of them. Enough of them.
Yeah, but the ones who they are playing are the kinds of players who you might say things like, they look old beyond their years, but they don't have that spark. I mean, the players who are really young players who are really sort of getting people excited in the Bundesliga. I mean, Jadon Sancho is the obvious name.
Sure.
To a lesser extent, you might say, I don't know, like Christian Pulisic in past years, mm-hmm. or you know, Luka Jovic for Eintracht Frankfurt. These are the kinds of players who are coming at the game with a kind of unexpected.
Sounds like you have the same problem in Germany as we do in the United States. So
yeah,
so that problem is, hey, we're creating a lot of great workmanlike players, but we're not creating the specialists that can win us games. So you're talking about a specific type of player now that's not being developed, right, Matt?
Yeah, I would definitely say that that's true. I think that Germany, when it comes to having, you know, good holding midfielders, competent, you know, sort of tactically astute players in all across midfield are all right.
Mm-hmm.
But the kinds of, you know, wing strikers and number 10s, the kind of players who, as you say, often decide games, especially really tight games played at a very high level, it isn't going so well for Germany right now.
So, and we're talking to Matt Herman, talking football here. He's got a lot of great knowledge about the German Bundesliga and on over there. So as we continue this discussion on youth, is it just maybe a bad cycle, or is it the way German youth are being trained and handled now? Because then that's an indictment of the German clubs who, you know, in recent times, we've been lauding for what they've done with young German players.
Yeah, you know, in some ways, it's going to take a little bit of time to figure that out. I mean, every country has good cycles and bad cycles. And I think Germany was lucky enough to have, you know, a couple of good cycles in a row, and maybe they got a little spoiled. But it isn't yet clear whether or not something methodologically is wrong with Germany. I mean, the scouting across Germany over the last 20 years has really been revolutionized. The number of all professional clubs have to run a sort of top-to-bottom, you know, professionalized youth academy, and that has done wonders for both the German national team and the Bundesliga, not only in terms of quality of play, but in terms of, you know, clubs being able to sell players on for good money. And there is a sense, it's not yet clear whether this is a true sense or a justified sense, though, that by bringing players in, you know, at age 10, 11, 12, or even younger in some clubs' cases, and really putting them through their paces tactically, in some ways might be coaching a little bit of, you know, the street footballer out of them. I mean, this is, it's hard to say because there's a lot of countries where, you know, the street football scene is not what it once was. I mean, even in you know, Paris and London, which are sort of the two hotbeds these days in Europe of street footballers, there's a lot of organized playing going on. And it's not like these guys are just playing pickup football. But there is the idea that maybe the highly regimented, you know, system of German youth development is not going to produce the magic that some of the players in the past have produced.
Understood, and I think that's a common thing we hear here in the United States as well. Okay, we got about 4 or 5 more minutes, Matt. I want to bounce a couple topics off you, kind of rapid fire here. Is Bayern going to catch Borussia Dortmund in the Bundesliga table when it's all said and done?
If Marco Reus misses, let's see, more than 4 games for the rest of the season, yes, for sure. I think that's really the problem right now for Dortmund. And the longer he stays out, it's going to spell trouble for them.
Are they a little wobbly right now?
Absolutely, yeah. They haven't managed to win a game in the last 2.5 weeks. They have, you know, been basically virtually bounced from the Champions League, bounced from the German Cup. They've drawn a couple games in a row in the Bundesliga, and it's definitely not a good time for them right now.
Boy, they had a rough Champions League match. I actually thought Christian Pulisic actually played well in the first half of that game. That was 0-0 at halftime, I believe. I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
How about a little bit on Christian Pulisic, because you watch him week in and week out?
Yeah, I mean, what there is to watch of him week in and week out,
yeah.
Unfortunately. I would agree. I thought in the first half, when Dortmund were functioning well in that game, that he was, you know, really contributing. And, you know, the heavy touches that he had in the second half, he was not alone in that. I mean, Jadon Sancho and Rafael Guerrero, who eventually came in for Pulisic, were also having heavy touches. I mean, this is not the way I think he wanted to leave the club, on a sort of down note. And I think there's still time for him to play a big role, especially if some of other Dortmund's other attacking midfielders stay injured. He might get more chances, but, you know, he's working out a little injury issue of his own. He's got some sort of a hamstring pull, and I don't know when he's going to be back.
Matt Herman, Talking Football, joining us here. Great stuff here on Now We're Talking, obviously, the table in the German Bundesliga, some of the young American talent that there. RB Leipzig, Tyler Adams, you can't ask for a better sort of introduction into the Bundesliga, can you?
Oh, man, yeah. He has made an instant impact, and I think it's really helped him to come into a team that is functioning as well as Leipzig is at the moment. I mean, the Leipzig system is, you know, in some ways analogous or similar to the New York Red Bull system. There is sort of a you know, club family-wide philosophy of playing a pressing game, and I think he found it easier to get into that. But, man, this Leipzig team, who had a bit of an uneven start to the season, I think are really one of the strong teams in the league right now. And I think, you know, having another guy who they can slot into that, you know, central midfield position as well as Tyler Adams can, is only going to help them for their push for the Champions League. And I'm pretty sure they're going to get Champions League football next year.
Tell you what, for me, it's a bit of a blueprint here, and I know people they think very differently about Red Bull Leipzig, you know, because of the three clubs, obviously Leipzig, Salzburg, and in MLS with the Red Bulls. But I think for Tyler Adams, what you alluded to was the fact that he's playing in a very similar system that he's going to get to in Germany. So it's not like you're going over there and you're thrust into an entirely different system under a manager asking you to do different things. So that part of the equation is maybe a little bit easier to handle, right?
Absolutely. And from comments that I've heard in the past from Jesse Marsh, I mean, prior to him even taking this job in Leipzig, is that, you know, Jesse Marsh has been learning from Ralf Rangnick, who is presently the coach of Leipzig, but has also been the sporting director and will go back to being the sporting director next year. I mean, some of Jesse Marsh's philosophy of football has come from Ralf Rangnick. So, you know, if Tyler Adams is used to what Jesse Marsh has been telling him for the past couple of seasons, he's probably hearing some of the same things that you know, Jesse Marsh was getting from Ralf Rangnick. And, you know, that system is not only going to benefit Adams, but it might well benefit Jesse Marsh too. I mean, they're looking for a coach down in Salzburg next year, and I think there's a decent chance he gets that job.
Weston McKennie, Schalke, played today. What about him and kind of his versatility in this league? Do you ever see him settling, and where do you think positionally is his best place, as he's obviously going to be looked upon as a big piece of the future of the U.S. national team?
Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky thing. I think it's definitely to his credit that he can play so many positions at Schalke, and it's to his credit that he's impressed his coach, Domenico Tedesco, as much as he has, that he wants to play him in just about every game. You know, whatever hole he needs filling, he will fill it with Weston McKennie. But at the same time, I really would like to see him settle into playing as something of an eight, I mean, which is really where he probably should be playing for the U.S. as well. Because I think that, you know, uses his skills best. And you know, when I see him lined up as a right back or as a center back or as a forward, I'm happy to see him in the team. But at the same time, I wish he could just get more games as an eight.
Yeah, and versatility will make sure he has a long career. But I agree with you. Sometimes being the jack of all trades, there's pros and cons to it, no question. Thomas Müller, where do you think he is right now?
He's had a rough,
you know, since the World Cup.
Yeah, he's had a rough couple of seasons, yeah. Really. It's, strangely enough, he went into, I don't know, maybe the European Championships of 2016 on a real high. I mean, he was scoring lots of goals that season. It was his best goal-scoring season. And really, the 2.5 seasons since then, he has been a completely different and less productive player. I don't know exactly whether this is a matter of his body giving out a little bit, or, you know, him not necessarily being first choice all the time, or not finding a role in Niko Kovac's system in this season. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, because he's so identified with Bayern Munich as a player that you can't really imagine him at another club. But if he wants to be a sort of lockdown starter, I think he might have to go somewhere else, either next season or the season after that, because there's just, frankly, better options for Bayern in most of that sort of, you know, bank of three behind Lewandowski right now. And it's a weird thing to think, because he's a legend, but I'm not sure whether Bayern's going to be the club of the future for him.
You know why I've always loved him, Matt? Because if he was walking down the street, you would never think this guy was a professional athlete and as good at his craft as he is. I also loved what he did to Diego Maradona in Argentina in the World Cup when Maradona, remember, didn't even know who he was and didn't want to sit next to him in a press conference, and then he absolutely annihilated him. I like that about specific athletes when they don't always fit the prototype, yet they're just amazing at what they do. I hope he reclaims his form.
I do, too, and it's interesting you mentioned that about him sort of coming across as a regular guy in terms of his stature and the way he carries himself, or the way he looks.
He looks like a fun guy, too. He looks like he has a good time.
He's a super fun guy. Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that, you know, I'm dealing with him in like, mixed zone situations, mm-hmm. there's a lot of players who don't really relish that. I mean, even the ones who sort of have a good patter, who have a few good lines, they don't sort of enjoy themselves. But, man, Thomas Müller, there can be just a ring of 20 journalists holding their recorders out to him, and he loves it. He actually responds with wit and with a certain joy to the things that he's asked, and he gives good quotes. He's a guy who seems to really like the limelight, even though he also is not a sort of flashy dresser or flashy spender like some players of his stature. He's an interesting character, and I you know, would like to see him for many years to come.
Yeah, me too, and I think there's a lot of MLS players that could learn lessons from him, especially in a league that needs people that are good in front of a microphone and can talk up the game and promote their teams in local markets. They could learn a lot from Thomas Müller, who, like you said, does seem to enjoy it. And I want to talk to you about some of the other players in the future, but this has been a great, great intro having you on with Talking Fußball. Tell everybody where they can hear you, Matt.
All right. Talking Fußball, you can, you know, find us on Twitter or on the World Wide Web. Talking Fußball, FUSSBALL, for those of you who are not, you know, German speakers, Germanophiles, if you will. But our podcast comes out every week after the match day with a wrap of results and storyline. And then we also have another podcast that's at the end of the week before each match day, which is for people who play Bundesliga fantasy. And, you know, that certainly gets a lot of people going as well.
Matt, we thank you very much. We heard it from Matt. If Marco Reus can score some goals here, Dortmund will win the title. If not, he's given it to Bayern. We thank you very much for coming on. I love guys who, you know, plant their flag in the ground, make a prediction. We love that about you, Matt. Thank you very much for coming on tonight.
Thank you.
All right, that's Matt Herman, Talking Fußball, and we appreciate a lot of great insight there on the Bundesliga and all things Bundesliga, which we catch here in the United States on Fox. All right, that does it tonight for producer Andrew Carlson. I remind you, the podcasts are at podcastarena.com, also on iTunes. Get over to Facebook Soccer Matters. That's where you get your Soccer Matters t-shirts. 20% goes back to the 501c charity Curing Children's Cancer Fund, cccfund.org. And so those are shirts with a purpose, but we've got them in a number of different colors right now. Victor Ariza, great work down in Guatemala, getting some great information and keeping us updated on the CONCACAF Champions League. I'm Glenn Davis. Until next week, remember, that's a live show down at King's Court. Remember, soccer matters.